Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening and welcome to another edition of the Bachelor Pad. We thank you for joining us as always on blogtalkradio.com and the BachelorPadNetwork.com, Facebook.com, VC.com. We're all over the place, stepping in and out. And we appreciate all those who are watching and listening. 646-929-0130, the number to get in touch with us. Let's go to the phones, bring in our first guest, of course, from always good to have him on, from sportsawakening.com and other outlets, which we will get into. He is Mike Patton. And Mike, appreciate you joining us on short notice, sir.
No problem, man. No problem. How you doing?
Good. And so I you know, we haven't really had a chance to get into a lot of the college college football stuff, other than briefly this past Monday. But I wanted to bring you on for that and some other things we'll get to real quick. But, you know, you look at the results in the different conference championships, Alabama taking care of business being one of them. Now we know, you know, where everybody's going to be. Assess teams that should have, you thought, been there and didn't get an opportunity to make it there.
Well, I wouldn't say didn't get an opportunity to make it there, but Georgia should have
been there and didn't make it. Should have been there and didn't make it.
Ah, boy. Let's see. As far as that, I mean, let me start by saying they got the selection of the teams right for the teams that are in there. However, Georgia blew their chance. They had a lead on Alabama, and they couldn't seal the deal. Kirby Smart outsmarted his own self and did something stupid, but that's just him. as far as Ohio State, I hear the big cry about Ohio State. No, Ohio State did not deserve to be in there. Everyone got caught up in looking at the Michigan win and forgot about them barely beating Maryland, them getting stomped by Purdue. Did they forget that? No, I think they did. But, you know, as far as the teams in there, they got the correct amount of teams in there, the correct teams in there. I think eventually it goes to an 18 field. But the only thing that's keeping it from that is the check-in, right, and the money's looking funny. That's the only thing that's keeping it funny, away from that actually happening. But those are the only two teams I can really say, hey, those two teams are not in there. Maybe a UCF, but with Milton out of there, they really didn't have much of a chance anyway.
UCF, and big ups, I see you, Fred Wittit, my man. I didn't talk to you in a minute. Big ups to you, sir. UCF, I don't know if it's a tired argument, Mike. I mean, they mm-hmm. they've done everything they're supposed to do from a football standpoint. They've won, right? They've done what they needed to do, yet they're never in – or that level is never in that conversation mm-hmm. when it comes to the playoff series in football. What do a program like that have to do to be in that conversation, to be legitimate? I mean, they're legitimate in their program and their fans and a lot of us, right? But in terms mm-hmm. of the NCAA, what do they need to do to get to that point to actually be effective to have a shot at a true shot at a national championship?
Unfortunately, what I think happens with them is their conference hurts them. All the people that they play,
we've heard that, Mike.
Memphis,
but Mike, with all due respect, because I respect you. That's, you know, I mean, you do your thing. But honestly, we've heard that before. So mm-hmm. what can they do outside of the conference hurting them, because they're a small school at a conference that hurts them? What can they do outside of that? Because we've heard that argument before.
The only thing I could say is maybe kind of flip the schedule a little bit in the non-conference games. What I would say is maybe beef up your schedule in those aspects. That's the only thing I can see that could change their trajectory or their end game, to be honest.
So nothing to change that other than the fact that the NCAA is going to be the NCAA. And
that's
to
true.
Get their attention, so to get their attention, they have to go gangbusters outside of the conference and win gangbusters outside of the conference in order to be considered into that argument for the playoffs and national championship.
That's what I believe they need to do. Unfortunately, it doesn't sound great, and I know it doesn't make UCF fans very happy at all, but unfortunately, those are the breaks because, you know, essentially the other bigger conference, even their worst team, may have a better ranking than some of the teams that they play during the year in their conference, which is not their fault. They beat everybody that was in front of them, but it's just, you know, the common denominator in terms of, you know, strength of schedule and all those type of things.
Talking with Mike Patton, of course, here on the pad. So do you think that from a football standpoint that a UCF can get to a point based on those parameters that you said, like a Gonzaga or Creighton or whatever in basketball, where now it seems to be the norm that a Gonzaga or someone like that will get a 5 seed or a 2 seed or even a 3 seed based on that? Can a UCF, can football programs at that level, and we haven't even talked about HBCUs, can they get to that point of basketball where they get that kind of respect?
I would say it would be very difficult. The only reason I would say it'd be very difficult is because you're dealing with a slimmer margin of error in football. Football, you can't lose any games, especially if you're a lower tier school trying to make it to the big time. And also, when you flip it towards basketball, you look at a Gonzaga or a Creighton or anybody like that, you can still lose maybe 3 or 4 games during the season, still get a 1 seed and have a chance to make a tournament, whereas the NCAA doesn't necessarily have – NCAA football doesn't necessarily have a tournament. They have a 4-team tournament, but it's truly not a wide-open tournament like the NCAA basketball tournament is. So that would be the issue.
Mm. And it's very unfortunate, man. I mean, because when you look at the fact that, you know, if they're going to give the same respect and saying that, you know, you're playing who's ever on your schedule and you're winning, then they should give the same respect to football. They give it to basketball, but they don't give it to the football level. And now we have this, you know, this whole playoffs series. I don't think it's right. When you look at the teams that are left, going back to football, what's the best matchup in terms of who you see left? I mean, Alabama. Obviously, to me, they're versatile. Defensively, they're good. They're well coached. Even though I don't like him, they're well coached. They have issues though with mobile quarterbacks. You said that last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they also have issues. But they also have issues with their back seven in terms of covering. We've seen that if you block them, you can throw the ball. If you block them, you can move the ball.
Right.
So it's not just the fact that they have issues with those quarterbacks that are athletic who can throw and run, and they have quarterbacks. Obviously, we saw in the Georgia game, they have them on their side. But they also have issues with guys on the back end who can cover. So what do you see in terms of weaknesses with all these teams, in particular Alabama, going into these playoffs?
Well, definitely Alabama's got their kryptonite they're facing in the first installment with Kyler Murray, who will win the Heisman Trophy, which, you know, I know won't be a thing that Alabama fans will want to hear, but, yeah, Kyler Murray's going to win the Heisman Trophy. But that ought to be interesting to see how they can try to contain him. And, you know, they don't have necessarily – they have athletic linebackers, but they don't have those athletic phenomenons at linebacker that they used to have. So it ought to be interesting to see how he's able to break down their defense and put stress on them. You know, as far as Oklahoma, I would say their biggest weakness is their defense. Sure, they came up and made a few plays against Texas, but their defense is not ideal. It is essentially – the routine Big 12 defense that can't really play
it,
defense.
And
so.
Mike, honestly, you point and you spot on. It's really a Big 12 defense, which is not non-existent, and they really haven't, under Stoops and beyond, they really haven't had a good, solid defense. I mean, you haven't seen an Oklahoma defense that scares you for quite some time with this program.
Right. You definitely haven't. And, I mean, I can't even remember the last Oklahoma player to get drafted on defense. That's been the last few years. That's how bad I think it's gotten in Oklahoma on defense. I will say, as far as Notre Dame, you know, they're going to have their usual. They're going to come out there, and, you know, every Notre Dame fan is going to be pumping their chest, talking about we're going to win this thing. But they struggle with athleticism as well. And the one thing that they struggle with that nobody talks about, covering the tight end. They definitely struggle with that. Vanderbilt exposed them because both their tight ends had a field day against them. So it ought to be interesting to see how they do in their matchup against Clemson, covering the tight end. Because whoever Clemson's tight end is, he's got to be licking his chops right now looking at this defense. So definitely that's a huge thing for them. As far as Clemson, complacency, and Trevor Lawrence getting fear in the bright lights. Because, you know, as much as everyone talks about how good Trevor Lawrence is, you've got to remember he's done some of these numbers against some poo-poo teams. So, you know, when you step up to the big time, can he actually do it? Because against Texas A&M, which wasn't necessarily a big-time team, he surely couldn't do it, and Kelly Bryant helped them win that game. So it's going to be interesting to see how he responds to facing the big-time players again. I know Notre Dame isn't a team that instills a lot of fear in a lot of people just historically over – not historically, but over what they've done the last few years. But still, they're a big-time team because they're in the top four.
You know, it's you look at the playoffs moving forward, what are the strong points of each team that when you look at the matchups will help each team? You already talked about Kyler Murray, and, you know, a lot of people don't want to see. You got the Baker Mayfields and all that, and here we go again in Oklahoma. But offensively, I don't know what we're going to get with Tua with Alabama. I don't know if Alabama's been stretching him enough, you know, in terms of, is that injury worse than what they've been letting on? But what do you see with the teams in terms of the positives offensively and particularly that they can do in these games?
Well, more than likely, the Tua injury is worse than what it is been told, because if you looked at Alabama over the years, look at what's happened after their national title games. Remember, Mark Barron had hernia surgery after that. A few other players had some serious surgery with the shoulders and things like that. But if you let Alabama tell it, nothing was very serious at all until they decided to go to the NFL. But, you know, I definitely think that the running game is still a huge key for Alabama. If Alabama can get the running game going like they usually do, then that opens up everything else, and that makes Tua a very dangerous quarterback, especially with the wide receivers they have, Judy and Ruggs, and I mean, all those guys, definitely talented crew. So that's a strength for them, the running game. That gets going, that can cause anybody in this four a problem, big problem. As far as Notre Dame, I would say their passing game actually has gotten a little better with him, Book at quarterback. You know, definitely that could carry them. He does make pretty good decisions. You have to worry about his health, but he does make pretty good decisions as well. So that may be a big strength for them. As far as Oklahoma, Kyler Murray. That is the guy that is the bright spot for them. The further he excels, the better their offense is, and he makes everybody around them better. Now, they may only get him for 1 year because he said he wants to go ahead and play baseball, but they better value this. As far as Clemson, I would say their front four is their value. because they have a lot of first-round picks or first-round caliber talent in that front four. So I definitely think that if that front four can get loose on any of these teams in this final four, they could wreak havoc and, you know, could make Trevor Lawrence's life a lot easier in terms of having to put up a bunch of points to win.
Going to come back to you on the NFL front in our 2 minute warning segment. Also ask you about the quarterback situation. Why Colin Kaepernick not still on the roster? You can hold your thought on that. Want to go to Orlando Hughes from KRSV Radio in Philly. And Orlando, first of all, good evening, my brother. Second of all, yes, sir. What questions you have for Mike Patton?
Not really on the college football scene. I mean, it's I don't know. This playoff series really doesn't rile up any enthusiasm on my part. It's definitely a no pun intended, a Southern thing, because, you know, aside from Notre Dame, which I don't think deserve to be in it, even though their record said that they should. It's the Alabama Invitational, so I'm good. Thanks. So the Alabama Clemson Invitational. Give me, I'm at Best Buy too, and you came to me, LA. But I don't see any. No questions for you, Mike. Let's you get ready to talk some football, NFL football.
Well, let's stay with the NFL real quick. The question, we have two questions of the night, Mike Patton, and I really specifically brought you in to get your thoughts on these. And I want to deal with the first one. If we get time to speak on the games, we will. If not, that's fine. But that's the second thought. My first thought is, in Orlando's division of the NFC East, you have the Washington Football Club, which we call them here because they still don't acknowledge Native Americans and the name, so we call them Washington Football. They have two quarterbacks now that are out. And you not only see injuries across the league, Mike, as you cover with injuries, but you see mediocrity that we talk about all the freaking time. Meanwhile, Colin Kaepernick, who's very accurate, who actually led his team to a Super Bowl, didn't win, but they led his team to a Super Bowl, is still on the sideline. We know why. We know why. But should the NFL teams bite the bullet, like they bite the bullet and seeing these guys kick women's asses and everything else, which we'll get to, and all this other stuff, bite the bullet and hire this kid? I mean, there's so many. Washington is just one example, Mike. Should they, will they, will it happen with Colin Kaepernick in this season? If not moving forward, to put this quarterback on a roster?
To be honest, you know, at first when he was out and no one would pick him up, I was thinking that's basically going to happen. They're going to have to. They're going to run out of quarterbacks. At this point, I honestly don't believe that he'll play another down in the NFL. And that's not necessarily a bad thing in terms of him, in terms of his health and not taking the hits, because – he's essentially found another calling in life that's bigger than football. But you
right.
know, as far as a football player, anytime Nathan Peterman's getting tryouts, anytime Mark Sanchez is your starting quarterback, then there's an issue that you'd rather lose and play and have butt fumble be your starting quarterback as opposed to signing a quarterback that actually is a proven winner. That tells me right there that you're not trying to win. And if I'm a fan of the Washington football team, then I'm not happy because my team's not trying to win. Leading the NFC East, we're leading the NFC East. Alex Smith goes down, you trust Colt McCoy and you bring Mark Sanchez in to be his backup. I mean, the guy ate a hot dog on the sideline during the game. Did people forget that? The guy ran into his own lineman and fumbled the football, hence butt fumble. The guy always makes the inexplicable interception that you just can't explain. What is he doing on the NFL roster? What is he doing? Are they trying to sell jerseys by having to model jerseys or something? That's the only thing I can think of is why he's on the side. Other than that, you know, it's pretty plain to see that teams would rather lose than have Colin Kaepernick be the quarterback of their team or be a quarterback on their team. And you know, it's pretty sad. It's pretty sad. I wouldn't pay season tickets if I had a team that was willing to lose more than actually employ a quarterback that could help me win.
But, you know, the second question for you, Mike, is the fact that, listen, you have a situation where the running back in Kansas City has been very successful for them, who've done a lot, who was cut because of video, a.k.a. Ray Rice. Ray Rice has ironically been reaching out to him. That the NFL missed, as they claim to. Kansas City didn't know, whatever the case may be. And that's okay. And I'm not condoning or I'm not coming down hard on this kid. I don't, whatever the case may be. The point is that it's not okay to kneel for you and I, who look like you and I, to get our heads bashed in by cops or criminal injustice reform. But
right.
It's okay for us to punch the hell out of some women and keep our jobs, or allegedly or potentially keep our jobs in the NFL. It's very sickening, and it's not even a racial thing on this level. It's a NFL union thing. It's a professional thing. Let's be real. It's been NFL, but, you know, it happens in other places. And it's a double standard, Mike. It just doesn't make any sense, dude. It makes no sense to me that Colin Kaepernick doesn't have a job, but a wide receiver or a running back, in the case, you know, of both Ray Rice and others, can have potentially jobs for crimes of beating the hell out of somebody, whether it be male or female, in the cases, female.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing to me too. I often scratch my head and wonder, the NFL owners, who pretty much are the commissioners. You know, I know everyone hates Goodell, but let's be honest, Goodell is the Manchurian candidate. The owners
That's
actually
right.
run the league. He just says what they want him to say. So essentially, you know, the owners care more about having some player out there that did this, that, and the other, then, oh, how dare you disrespect the flag, disrespect this, do this, that, and the other. You know, it just is maddening to me. And then, you know, while you're at it, we're talking about pro football, let's talk about the XFL, too, that's getting ready to come in 2020, and their rule about you got to stand and salute the flag and do all those type of things, too. So no one's going to talk about that. Everybody's talking about the excitement about the XFL coming back, but the people are conveniently skipping over that foolishness that they said. So Colin Kaepernick will never play in that league either because of that. So, I mean, honestly, it just stands for what America stands for. America wants to be offended or mad about things that essentially don't fit the dynamic of what that most of America is, which is white people, or, you know, basically white people that came here and took over a country that didn't belong to them and then tried to claim it as theirs. So essentially, if you're going against that, or they feel you're going against that, or you're fighting for equality, oh no, that's wrong. Let us be the big dogs, and then y'all can get what we don't get. Well, as soon as you start getting to the big table, no, you gotta back up. So essentially that's what it all comes down to in terms of the NFL and everything around it. Unfortunately in life, I hate to tell people, but I hate to tell white people, but essentially they will be the minority very, very soon. So then you know, you would think that hell froze over when that's going to happen. Because, you know, the first thing that I think about with that is I think about the Chris Rock comedy special when, you know, he's talking about white people. We're losing everything. We're losing everything when he's doing that. Yeah, that's what I think about every single time when I think about, you know, white people are going to be the minority eventually. And there's some white people that actually really are offended by that. They think this is their country, that we should be proud to be this, that, and the other, but that we shouldn't critique America. Well, we should, because we want America to be better, not to be the same old America, but in a different way. Essentially, you know, racism isn't as overt as it used to be in some situations. It's more corporate in some aspects, but it's still there, and it still hasn't been eradicated, or it still hasn't been addressed. But people want to cover it up and say, oh, well, they aren't doing this anymore or that anymore. No, 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 no. Stuff's still going on. It's just covered up a little bit more. That's the only thing.
Well, and that's real talk for you. And my guy, it has to be said, and it has to be said from folks like you, myself, and Orlando, Barry Barnes on, T-Mac, Reggie. I have a young gentleman from Alabama State on later. We have to be able to say that. We have to say that, Mike. It's important that Mike Patton just said that the way he said it and still going to eat and take care of his family and do what he do. That is profound that you said that and the way you said it. And I'm saying that not to you so much, Mike, but I'm saying it to all the people who are listening that we can't hide behind stuff like that. Like we have to be who we are. And we have to be able to look ourselves in the mirror and go, you know what? This is going to make some people uncomfortable, but this is the way it is. It's really important. I'm so happy that you said the way you said it. Orlando, he's going to bring him in. I know he has a thought on that. And Orlando, the two questions, and you can have the conversation with Mike, but the two question is, I guess the first one, again, is, we don't expect that Colin Kaepernick is not going to get a job, even if the 100 trillion quarterbacks in the league got hurt. Colin Kaepernick is not going to get a freaking job in the NFL. And that, as Mike said, that's probably good for him anyway in the long term. The second part of it is, though, as it relates not just the NFL, and Reggie, I see it on the line, not just the NFL, but just athletics. I started to make the question of professional. Then I said college and pro. Then I said, you know what, bump that. Just athletics. Do the governing bodies of whoever they are, whether it's high school, college, pro, whoever, Canadian League, do they get it right when it comes to domestic violence? Are we getting enough? Because, hey, if you see it on video, it can't walk like a duck and quack like a duck and be a dog. It's a duck. So if you see Ray Rice, if you see, in this case, Kareem Hunt, in these cases, it's really hard to defend, Orlando, these situations. So it is what it is. So are these institutions, whatever they are, getting it right with the reprimand and the punishment of these people? Kareem Hunt is 26. His NFL career is probably over in a year that they probably can win the Super Bowl. He's probably done. So are they getting it right, Orlando? I asked those two questions to you, a comment question, and then you go to Mike Patton, sir. Reggie, I see.
No, they're not getting it right. They're not getting it right because the NFL is entertainment. So how does entertainment now become the police? So you need to hire someone to do this if that's the case. So, and I want to jump around a bit, but isn't it oxymoronic that the Washington football team, the same team that signed Reuben Foster when they did no research, is now the team that has basically been just about forced upon taking Kaepernick, but they refuse to accept him on their roster.
And Orlando, please let our audience, if they don't know, you and I and Michael know and Reggie know who Reuben Foster is, but let them know who he is and his situation because they may not know.
Reuben Foster is a very talented linebacker, has been since he's in Alabama, but the story of Reuben Foster and even his teammates from Alabama that played for Washington all state that he's a problem, and he's a problem with this one particular lady because now she's trying to rescind her comment that he didn't abuse her, but there's an issue ongoing. He was signed by Washington. He was signed by Washington basically within days of being released by San Francisco. He's been arrested, Mike, and you quote me, correct me if I'm wrong, 3 times within the last year he's been arrested?
That's correct.
Yeah.
For domestic abuse and firearms,
right.
And now this one.
Right. But he's no stranger to the law. So and so you figure, you can say, look, it's my domicile, where I'm from. So I was in Alabama and down in that area. But then he goes out to the West Coast. So he gets a whole change of scenery, completely away from where he's from. And he's still getting into trouble. So, but long story short, he was signed by the Washington football team. The Eagles investigated into what was going on in San Francisco, and they laid hands off of him because he was someone that they wanted to draft at a price in a lower round. But they said, hell no, we won't take it. We don't need the headache. But this is the same football team, Daniel Snyder. Again, you got Colt McCoy. Then you bring in Mark Sanchez. And Daniel Snyder is a fantasy football owner. That's what he is to me. It's a fantasy football team. And Mike, you're so right when, you know, we got to call it for what it's worth. If there's one thing that Black Panther got right when they called them colonizers, and that's how a lot of white folks in this country act like colonizers. And we are someone that they colonize. And Colin Kaepernick is someone that has not, he's rescinded, he's bucked the trend. And the same thing is happening in the XFL. Same thing's happening in other sports. But, and again, you know me, LA, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all. But it's funny because Washington, D.C. has a huge black population. And blacks with money, blacks without money, whatever, smart people down in that area who love that football team. And I'm like, why? Joe Gibbs ain't coming back. Jack Kincook's not owning that team anymore. Why are you supporting this person, endorsing this team? And now don't tell me just because you grew up liking that team and loving that team, but why? I mean, Red said, look, he loves the Cowboys, but Red said after this crap with that idiot down there, he's done. And that's how we should all be taking a stand. So like if you want to be real about it.
You know, you make some really good points. I want to let people know I'm getting people saying, you know, you didn't bring up Kareem Hunt right away, but you brought up Ray Rice. I mean, see, we get into the little technical stuff, Mike and Orlando, and of course. T Mac could be with it, but like okay, I mentioned Ray Rice, right? And I did mention Kareem Hunt, Reggie, and it's very technical. By the way, they actually look like everybody on this panel. They're all black, right? And they all look like us in some fashion. Now you're being critical because I brought up Ray Rice, but I didn't eventually bring up Kareem Hunt. I mean, what? And it's probably guys, it's probably black folks. So I, you know, I don't know. Whatever. Reggie, I'm bringing you in. What say you, sir? Appreciate you, brother man. And thanks for joining the conversation. It's just funny, actually.
Gentlemen, peace and blessings. Good evening.
Yes,
first
sir.
First of all, you have trolls that like to troll the show and just want to pull your coattails just to mess with you. So I wouldn't even bother with
yes,
those idiots, just like those clowns that claim they're so upset with Mike London leaving Howard, but yet you were pissed off saying, oh, I guess he's going to make the signing shoes and keep their pants up and make sure that their ass not showing. Well, guess what? Certain quarterback, Mr. Cam Newton's brother, got the MEAC Offensive Player of the Year back to back. So obviously, what
right.
Coach London did must be working. But the hot story down here in Virginia, and I'm sure Orlando knows about this, that Mr. Smith had an infection in his leg. Now, you got people that are trolling different chat rooms, calling the man a punk, calling him soft. Now, this is real life. This man might lose his leg. We're talking about a staph infection off of an injury of which this young man received a broken leg. Matter of fact, I called ESPN 980, and this was instruction purposes only, because I know we don't give ESPN the mouth any kind of advertisement, because we know they eat cheese, and also they're not paying no advertising on the station. But it's just for instruction purposes only. I even told Brian Mitchell, I said, that was a documented special. I don't know if you remember this, L.A. It was called Disposable Heroes on HBO. It came out in the 1980s. You had football players in their 20s, 30s, around with walkers and back braces because of the injury of the NFL game. Then they interviewed Jim Otto that had every bone in his body damn near broke. From top of his head to his fingers, all the way down to his toes. And we see the same kind of viciousness that's going on now. And Alex Smith is fighting for his life literally in the hospital of the staph infection. But these bloodthirsty, sorry ass fans, upset up in Washington, buried in gold, because number one, they signed that big contract, so now they said that contract is going to happen up against the players to help. And, oh, by the way, the Baltimore Ravens did the same thing to Joe Flacco. These fan bases kill me. They do everything they can to blame the players for getting big money. And you know it's bad now when they try to attack the European players. That's how sorry some of these people are. But in my opinion, social media has made a lot of, should we say, pin-pushing giants that are badasses on the keyboard for little bitches when you meet them in person. And that's the problem going on right now. They can attack you in any direction. And what's happening with Alex Smith right now is that the fan has come out and told the Washington Redskins organization, please respect our privacy. Oh, by the way, something called HIPAA that tells you that this person has a significant medical problem and has done your business. But of course, TMZ and these other people are trying to pry and try to do everything they can to find out. Actually, they weren't supposed to get information about him having a staph infection. I don't know how that got out. And Orlando, maybe you can help with that, Orlando, because information like that is not supposed to be made to the public. Can you help me, Orlando?
Well, we are going to go back. I'm going to get Orlando's thoughts on that too, Reggie, so stay on the line. I'm running behind. But I want to finish up with Mike, so if you can stay on the line too, Orlando and Reggie. Mike, when you look at the overall issue of what we're saying, in particular what Reggie's saying in terms of, you know, how they break down these teams and break down these infections that, listen, we've seen in Cleveland, we've seen in Pittsburgh, and that's NFL pro, these staph infections that these things take place. But as it relates to, you know, the overall professionalism, Cowan is not going to get a job You said that. And anybody that has any kind of dialogue as it relates to that, and people looking at me like I'm crazy here on Facebook, you know, he has set a tone that is that a good thing, a bad thing, that people will not do it, you think, Mike, or you know, whatever, because he's not going to get a job. I agree with you. It could be every team in the league can have a injury, starter or backup, and Colin will not be a starter or backup or third string in this league. I think we've established that here on this broadcast. But where are we with that? You know who Kurt Flood is and with the Cardinals, St. Louis Cardinals, and free agency and what happened there in baseball. Where is Colin Kaepernick in terms of quarterbacks taking social stance moving forward, man? Because he is not the dude. I mean, he's the dude. I'm just saying it's not moving forward with him. He's the sacrificial lamb at this point.
Man, it just honestly, just looking at the whole situation, just in the NFL, I'll say this. I cover the NFL, but, you know, if I wasn't covering the NFL, I probably wouldn't watch as much NFL because it just stings and hurts the thoughts of some of the people that watch it. I mean, honestly, I was in the crowd. I don't know if you know, but I was in the crowd watching the Titans and the Jets game. And man,
right.
You would have thought Todd Bowles was the worst coach in the world. One of the fans told me he was the worst coach in the NFL. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I'm like, do you see what he's working with? Can you name me one top 50 player that's on that team? There's not one. So, you know, I was just like, you know, really? Are you serious? But, you know, when they call him the worst team and worst coach in the NFL, I'm like, no. Look at maybe your guy down in Tampa Bay. He potentially could be the worst coach in the NFL. I mean, let's just be honest. So, you know, it was amazing some of the names they're calling that man. And I'm sitting there like, oh, do not get up out of your seat. Do not go off on people today because you got a job to write about stuff. But, you know, I was sitting amongst the fans in the crowd, about 10 rows from the field, and amongst some Jets fans. And, you know, it was definitely quite interesting, but that is the world that we live in terms of sports fans that feel they can say whatever they want, and there's no consequences. It's crazy. Like Reggie was saying, had courage, liquid courage.
Yeah, but, Mike, the only thing I'm saying is that it's exasperated. And, Tom, I see you on the line. It's exasperated when you go after Todd Bowles in this case,
right?
Because he had an opportunity and he has an opportunity and they're not winning.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the conversation behind of he needs to be fired is not coaching is about the color of skin as a coach. And that's a problem.
Right.
And I know that's what you address, but it's sad, man. I mean, it really is a.
Hey, LA, I do definitely have to get off the line at this point.
Yes, sir. Yes,
I really want to hang in there, but I do have to get off the line. Man.
No, I know. I appreciate you, sir, as always, man. Thanks for coming on. We'll get you on next week, and thanks for your time and your patience this evening, sir.
Yes, sir. No problem. See you, fellas.
All right, Mike. Mike Patton, of course, of sportsawakening.com. We're going to take a 30-second break, come back, get Tom Donaldson on. We're going to switch gears to politics. The death of George H.W. Bush, the legacy.
Hey there, this is L.A. Bachelor, host of the Bachelor Pad show from the Bachelor Pad Network, inviting you to tune in on Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, for the Donaldson File with your host, Tom Donaldson and Coco Cosney. They bring politics and other perspectives from the left and from the right. The Donaldson Files, every Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network.
Welcome back to the pad, and again, as you heard in the promo, you can listen to the Donaldson Files with Tom Donaldson, Coco Konski, every Tuesday and Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern. They do sports and politics, but mostly politics, of course, from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern. They do delve into other topics, so you do need to check out their show as they delve into that. Speaking of which, Tom Donaldson is on the line.
Yeah.
Tom, appreciate your patience hanging on the line.
Yeah.
I won't keep you long because I know you got to go. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. Before you ask me a question on politics, I do want to make one quick comment about Todd Bowles, and I want to make a kind of a comparison to 2007 and Doc River and the Celtics, because everybody knew coming into the season, you have a rookie quarterback. This was a rebuilding year. And you essentially told – and you're telling your coach, this is a rebuilding year. We'll give you a chance to build this thing up. And I'm listening to Mike's comments, and I'm like, everybody knew day one this is a rebuilding year, and you got to give that coach a chance to rebuild with his team, or you should never allowed him to stay the beginning of the season. And, you know, Danny Ainge did the same thing in 2007. He basically told Doc Rivers, hey, play the young kids, tell Paul Pierce to recover his knee, and we'll give you a chance once we rebuild this team to coach a good team. And that's exactly what he did. He allowed Rivers to basically go right into the lottery. They lost, you know, but they were like the seventh worst team in that league that year. And next year they get Kevin Garnett, and they say, Doc, now do your magic. So,
right.
It's kind of an interesting aspect of all of this.
But you don't get the opportunity, or that coach doesn't get the opportunity. I get where you're coming from, but.
Yeah,
you got to give the opportunity to the
coach. Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, to me, if you didn't think this guy was your coach, you shouldn't have allowed him to start the season. You should have said, let's go with somebody else and rebuild with Darnell. When you basically
so you have a problem with the Packers firing McCarthy where they are at this point.
Yeah, I would have let him finish the season, but in that case, I think he was on borrowed time because he was at a point of his career. There was a disconnect between him and Rodgers and him and the offense. So I just think in the end, that was a marriage that had to be ended. But that's a different story versus Todd Bowles, because in the case of the Packers, they weren't expecting not to make the playoffs. Whereas with the Jets, everybody knew they weren't going to make the playoffs. They knew you have a rookie quarterback. We're going to rebuild around this rookie quarterback. There's a big difference. One guy was supposed to make the playoff. He didn't. The other guy was supposed to rebuild the team and be given the opportunity to rebuild the team. So if you and I hope I'm kind of making my point clear, they weren't being fair.
No, you
they're
are.
Being fair to Todd. Yeah, they're not being fair to Todd Bowles if they're going to fire the guy when they basically told him at the beginning of the year, we don't expect you to win.
That brings me to, excuse me, Tom, like last night, excuse me, with the cold. It brings me to Colin Kaepernick. You said this on your show, but I wanted for Pad Nation to hear this, that the fact is that, listen, this guy can ball out. You have to be able to be very good if you can, even if you lose, you have to be good enough to get your team to a Super Bowl. That's what Colin Kaepernick did. You have a Washington team that lost their starter and lost their backup. And now they're in their starter backup. And other teams that not only have injuries, but mediocrity in terms of play, yet Colin Kaepernick is still not on somebody's roster. Should he? Will he be on somebody's roster?
Yeah, that's a good question on the will he? Because, yeah, and I guess to me this, if you want to have a shot at winning, you need to have a quarterback. Now, I don't know how much Colin it would take for Colin to, get himself in football shape and whatever. But you can't.
Well, he's been training.
Here's my point. Here's my point I'm going to make. You basically bring in Sanchez, who's in the same boat. He hadn't played in a couple of years either. And then you got – then you sign Josh Johnson, who hasn't played in 3 or 4 years.
Right.
So you have a quarterback who, athletically, in my view, would fit that team in the sense that, people tend to forget, Alex Smith is a mobile quarterback, and so is Colt McCoy. I mean, they're not just strictly drop back, but they're drop back, but they can run the ball if they need to. They can, go on the outside if they need to. And this is what Kaepernick. The only difference to me would be is Kaepernick, it was never a quote-unquote accurate quarterback, but he did have the athletic ability to escape, and he has the one thing that Sanchez doesn't have, namely he can run out of trouble and maybe pick up some yards. The worst thing you're going to do is lose with Kaepernick. So what? You're going to lose with Sanchez. This is a team that just 2 or 3 weeks ago was looking at the playoffs. Possible playoffs leading the East. Now they're looking at lottery picks. So you got nothing to lose. If you want to win, this is where you play. If you don't want to win, then why don't you just come out and admit it, hey, we're going to play for next year. So I mean, that's the way I – and I'm a I'm a Washington Redskins fan for my life. I've been watching – I was born with this team. And it kind of irritates me. Like, hey, at this stage of the game, I don't care. Politics is different in Colin Kaepernick, but when it comes to watching my Redskins, I want them to win. And who gives you the best chance of winning? That's what it comes down to. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. And that's good. I'm going to come to the whole political side of that because you mentioned yesterday, we talked about, a player on the roster now, that has controversy in San Francisco, but Orlando, you have a question for Tom. I just think that Washington in particular, and I see a Washington person online, can sign. You lose your starter and your backup. And this dude is sitting on the sideline. This is Vince Young all over again, Orlando. The fact that you have this guy here and they want to make up the things, or maybe it's not made up, whatever. But you have this quarterback that's athletically gifted to make these plays, and yet he's sitting on the sideline and they don't go after. You want the butt quarterback, or you want the Colin Kaepernick who actually went to a Super Bowl? That's the question there.
Listen, first of all, good evening to Tom. And what Tom said is right. But here's another point to add on to that. If I'm Daniel Snyder, from a selfish marketing standpoint, I can make a lot of money off of a number 7 Washington football team jersey. He can't wear 7 because Thijsman wore 7 in D.C. But he can wear a jersey, and you can market that. It's even all the more perfect. Colin Kaepernick, along with that broken offensive line, Adrian Peterson, and that defense, which is still pretty good, the defense is okay, gives you an opportunity to possibly, you're not going to make the playoffs, but you can salvage a little bit of your season because you have 2 divisional losses, so I think the winner of this division is only going to have 1 loss, and that's going to be either the Eagles or Dallas, and that's 2 to be determined on Sunday. But Daniel Snyder is stupid, and he has shown that he's heavily under the influence of what Donald Trump says as far as his policy and what Donald Trump's tweets out. And I would figure for him to be smarter than that, because these people aren't stupid, these owners, because they're billionaires. They run businesses. They know how to make money. But why is it that we can think of how to make them more money and they're not thinking of it, which is dumb. But, I mean, to each his own.
Yeah. Well, let me just kind of follow up because, you know, the reality is that Washington, over the past few years, have had a lot of no-shows at games. So there'll be – look, when I grew up, you couldn't get a ticket, literally could not get a ticket. From the time Vince Lombardi came to D.C., to the Allen years, to the Gibbs years, you had a waiting list of 20,000 people. Yeah, I had a good friend of mine. He was one of those 20,000. He finally gets, he finally got in. Now he says, "Well, Christ, there's like 10 or 15, 20,000 seats available every game." So,
yeah. And it's been like that the last couple of years too, Tom, in terms of Pittsburgh, Washington are a couple of places in the NFL where people die and they pass on their season tickets to them. So you're absolutely right. Reggie, you have anything you want to add to that as it relates to Colin Kaepernick, Reggie, because, again, this is a situation where this man can ball. And I'll slap my hands, folks. Man can ball. Yet he's sitting on the sidelines at a place, in particular Washington. They just had their leading quarterback and a backup quarterback, which is scary, go down to injuries.
Well, I can tell you, first of all, good evening, Tom. And I want to apologize to Mike Patton because I didn't hear him all earlier. I want to acknowledge that Mike Patton was on. Situation is, and Tom, I need your help with this.
Sure.
Now, it's something we call HIPAA, kind of ham sandwich. Can the media, I don't know, TMZ, FNZ, or whoever did it, find out that Mr. Smith has a staph infection in his leg? Now, either I'm getting a good lawyer and I'm suing somebody's ass, because that's nobody's business.
Well,
so that
way,
one
let me put it this way. I'm guessing that somewhere somebody on the team released that. I have to assume that.
Wow.
I have to assume that. So I thought I understood because I would put it this way. Yeah, first of all, somewhere somebody leaked it from the team. That's my guess. That's how these things work. Or, because I didn't hear any official announcement until I read it on Bleacher Report, and I'm thinking, oh my God.
Right.
So, I mean, this guy's bad enough as it is. I mean, this is to me is a career-ending injury. I don't see him ever coming back.
Well, he's done. Yeah. See, his wife had to come out today. Like I said, I was on with Brian Mitchell, and they were asking people, please respect the privacy of the family. And even Gruden finally got up there and said, can y'all please respect the privacy of the family? And like I say, I'm suing somebody's ass. If it's the Washington Football Team organization, somebody needs to be fired. Because that type of information, you got a broken leg, that's fine. But then you start digging personal about staph infection, you crossed the line then.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, unless the Smith family says we're going to release this information so people can know more about what I'm going through, that's fine. But on the other side of the equation, you're absolutely right. Somebody had to leak it. That's all I got to say. I mean, someplace somebody leaked it.
And
it's a tragedy because, like I say, you're absolutely correct with the laws being what they are. Yeah, it's illegal too.
Right. Sure, and you see those leaks, Tom, at that level, as well as politics. I want to let folks know that they're listening to the Bachelor Pad show. It airs every Monday and Tuesday. Well, Monday from 6 to 8, Tuesday 7 to 8, and on Thursday 6 to 8. Before that, you can hear on Tuesdays and Wednesdays the Donaldson Files with Tom Donaldson and Coco Cassini. They bring politics from the left and the right, conservative, liberal politics, and other topics, as you hear Tom Donaldson talking about. I see Barry Barnes. Sir, I will get to you in a sec if you can pause. I really appreciate you. Tony T. Mac McClain, Reggie in Orlando. Tom, TD, before I let you go, I do have to go politics with you quickly.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm sorry. I to get into the football because I was just fascinated with the Todd Bowles and what Mike was saying.
No, you're fine.
And I'm
you're fine because I know you. You cover sports,
right.
And that's fine. What I wanted to ask you about was before we switch to break is George H.W. Legacy, the passing, and again, peace and blessings to their family. I never get into any negative vibes with, you know, passings and things of that nature. But as we spoke on your show and Larry Fiedel's show, Dr. Fiedel's show, you know, this was a man, in my opinion, I'm speaking for me, that was very respectful. I'd never, ever agreed with anything that he did in terms of policy, but I never had a problem with him, like 45, Tom, number one. Number two, he never had a problem that he only won that first term, right, and his son went past that. And number three, there are some things, though, that you have to bury your dead. There are some things that he didn't get a negative feedback on over the last couple of days that he should. The Willie Horton thing, which made it seem like all black people are going to get out of jail and kill white folks and pregnant women and everything else. We talked about that briefly last night. And then the other thing was that he was very vicious after Bob Dole won in Iowa. I think it was Iowa or Vermont. I can't remember. He was very vicious. Right. So he was very vicious on reputation. And Bob Dole said he was lying. That word lying is something that we hear now. So speak to the Willie Horton thing, the lying thing, and the fact that he only won one term, and that's a big thing because you win president is a big term, but he won the one term, but he wasn't really bitter after that. Like, he just kind of went on the sunset and just laid low after that, Tom, briefly.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, first of all, in the case of I'll start with the Bob Dole first. This is politics. Okay, and you know, he attacked, you know, the record of Bob Dole on tax increases, and the bottom line was, this is part of politics, is up to Bob Dole to defend himself. Is it vicious? I mean, I look at it in the sense that it was no more vicious than what you see in any other political discourse. So I mean, it's far worse. But Willie Horton is kind of interesting because you got to remember the reason why that became an issue or that became an ad is because Al Gore was the person who introduced that ad originally against Dukakis in the primaries. And he was actually the one to put a picture of Willie Horton on the ad itself. So basically what the Bush people did is they looked at this, they noticed, hey, this, you know, they notice, okay, this is about being soft on crime, soft on criminals. It's working. Al Gore used it against them. They just simply follow through. Now, you can dispute whether it should have ever been run or not, or how you would view it. But the one thing about the interesting aspect, and I guess you can make the case that the Willie Horton, you know, everybody knew he was black because Al Gore had already introduced that aspect to the case in the primaries. But
everybody knew he was black. Everybody knew he was black because he showed his face, though, Tom. So everybody knew he was black.
That's what I just said. It was Al Gore was the one who did that in his ads.
Okay.
It was not,
and I can live with that.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Now, which goes to, you know, number three, the point number three would be on his legacy. When, you know, sometimes a president can get a lot done in one term. You know, as we kind of discussed last night, I would view, to me, the one thing that he did is, you know, is he ended the Cold War? I mean, it's kind of like I had a discussion this afternoon with another individual, and we got talking about his legacy, you know, among other things. And I made the point to this individual, I said, look, this is like a 9-inning baseball game. Reagan got to the 7th inning. He's winning the game. Bush comes in and is the relief pitcher who finishes the game. And that's what they did. Between those two individuals, they ended the Cold War. And he was able to do
so.
So
that's
in
probably
such a
why
way.
He was a. So is that why he was so comfortable in losing to Clinton? Because he just kind of closed the deal? Okay.
You know, in a way, I can't really say, but, you know, it may have been a thought that crossed his mind. Hey, look what I've accomplished. I mean, he could at least say, I walked out the door, and here's what I accomplished. Yeah, you know, there are a lot of presidents who spent 8 years and would not accomplish what he did in 4.
Right.
So we have to say, I mean, he showed a steady hand in unifying Germany, ending the Cold War with Gorbachev, and basically showing, you know, and basically putting an alliance together against Saddam Hussein's invasion of Kuwait. That's a pretty good presidency for any president, 4 years or 8. And I think a lot of people are now looking back and saying, you know what, he did a pretty good job. Sometimes it takes a while for people to look at a presidency and say, yeah, that was pretty good. You know, Eisenhower is one of those presidents that today people look at as a good president, but if you ask any historian in the 60s and early 70s, they viewed him as a less than average president. Now we don't.
I don't even have a problem with him internationally, CIA and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, you get into that specifically. I had a problem, you know, domestically, but, you know, that deals with policy. But the final question, the very final question to you is that you've had George H.W., you had George Bush, you had Barack Obama, and now you got this dude. There's no civility, Tom. I'm not going to debate, and we won't debate. We can debate another day. But there's no real civility with 45. So how did we evolve? Well, let me finish. The question is, how did we evolve from there with this man who was respectful and honorable? And I'm saying that I believe that, and I think he was. I didn't agree with his policies, but I think he was respectful and honorable. So 45, how did we get there, and how do you justify that from George H.W. Bush to 45?
Yeah. All right, well, I guess I'm going to put it in this capacity. You asked the question of the lack of civility. It's not just Trump. We've been going in this direction now for about a decade.
Okay, we're not going to do that, Tom. I'm asking you about Trump.
Yes, we are, because
I'm asking about Trump, though. I'm asking about Trump. I'm not asking about anybody else. Okay, so I'm asking about
Trump. Yeah, but I'm trying to tell you, Trump is the result of what we've been going through. I mean, if you look at, for example, how many you know, in the case of Obama, look at the incivility that some showed to Obama. You look at the incivility some that showed to George Bush.
You're doing Trump's president, Hillary's not president. I don't care about Hillary. I don't care about Barack. Number 45 is the president. I'm asking you about him and the civility with him. I'm not asking about the people in between. I'm asking about him.
Well, okay. The answer is he fights back, but he's fighting back. Let me throw it back this way. Do I like everything that he does? I wish that he would, Tom, it's like a friend of mine was putting me, if the guy just basically dialed back 25-30%, he'd be fine. But he doesn't do that. But on the other side of the equation, civility works both ways. And it's not like, you know, the other side basically, I mean, you, what you're seeing is a war of ideas that have gone beyond what we've gone, and we're looking at a shift in the political paradigm. And when you see that, and when you see that, then you're going to see the kind of things that you see in Trump and America today, what you're seeing in France, what you're seeing throughout Europe, is we're witnessing the collapse of one political order and into the other. Now, if you're asking the question, no, Trump has never been a civil guy. He's not going to be a civil guy. He's not going to change. And he has not helped his own political cause. I can tell you, you know, if people have listened to our radio show, you know, the podcast, we've been looking at the post-election. And the one thing, you know, that's coming clear to the, when we ask people, and I've had like three different polls to ask people, they'll say up front, we don't like this guy personally. You know, even if we like his policy, we don't like this guy personally. And I think that there are times and places, to be quite frank about it, what I get irritated at is that the messenger is not – sometimes when you don't listen, you know, the message is there, but people are looking at the messenger and saying, I don't want to be with that. And that's going to be a problem in 2020. I'm not one of these people who think Trump's going to win. Yeah, that Trump's an automatic winner because – when you got a third of your own supporters thinking you got that you behave badly, you know, you got a problem.
Sure.
And that's a problem that's not going to go away. And it also hurts the fact that you can't have a civil conversation about a lot of different issues that we need to have civil conversations about. And we know that.
Well, we'll see. TD, and I appreciate your time and your patience, and thank you so much for this evening, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You take care.
Tom Donaldson, of course, from the Donaldson Files and other topics on the pad.
Hey there, this is L.A. Bachelor, host of the Bachelor Pad show from the Bachelor Pad Network, inviting you to tune in on Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, for the Donaldson Files. With your host Tom Donaldson and Coco Cosney, they bring politics and other perspectives from the left and from the right. The Donaldson Files every Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network.
And nothing in my head.